The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
So Neil and I got into a bit of an argument the other day. I can't remember what exactly we were talking about, but I used the word unkempt in reference to someone.
Yeah.
Neil got very upset and
she wasn't talking about me, by the way.
No, I wasn't. But he got very upset and screamed at me that the word is unkempt.
It is.
Not unkempt. And I said, unkempt is also a fucking word, but more so in reference to a person rather than like a place
no,
being
because
unkempt.
You'd still say state of him is unkempt.
I suppose you could do, but unkempt is specifically like a person. Like it's
referring. And then you'd say state of that room, it's unkempt.
Yeah, the but car, you. But here's the thing. If you prefer to say that, then, you know, go off. Do your thing. It's the fact that you took issue with me using a word because you didn't like it. This is like the time when I used the word latter and you got upset because you thought I was being thick. I was just saying later differently. And I was like, no, they're two different words. Do you remember that?
Yeah, vaguely.
Neil actually got a third party involved because he was that upset with my use of the word latter. So you see what I have to put up with? I literally can't speak. He acts like I'm an arsehole to him. It's the other way around, I tell you. I can't speak. He gets angry at me.
I didn't get angry.
This went on for a few days. I actually had to look it up and go, here, look it. Because at first I just kind of left. I was like, oh, whatever. But it kept going. I was like, nah, fuck you are.
I feel like I'm getting attacked.
There you go again. Making yourself out to be the victim.
No, because this is what happens with our listeners. They're all like, Megan's so sweet and she's so good with her information and her research and she's Irish. So fuck Neil.
To be honest with you, I think a lot of our listeners really like you.
I've been called mumbling man.
You have, but a lot of people compliment my accent, which thank you very much, but they find you hilarious. They love you.
I feel it's so. More they laugh at me than with me.
I don't think it is. I think you say the things that a lot of people are thinking.
Like, I'm still getting messages saying bless you because of the way I say kashu.
Well, you do fucking say it weird.
So, enough of that. What are we doing today?
Now, today we're going to be taking a look at two people who were featured in the documentary Paris is Burning, Venus Extravaganza and Dorian Corey.
Venus, that sounds familiar.
Now, I got Neil to watch this documentary in preparation for this episode.
Okay, yeah, I know.
I explained to Neil, this documentary is not about the crimes that took place, but it was the people who were featured in it.
No, right,
he
absolutely
got a bit confused.
Not. No, she said to me, I've got a documentary for us to watch. I want you to watch it before we cover it. She didn't say the crime wasn't in it. All she said was, we'll be covering it. So we sat down and we put it on while we were eating a tea, and it must have been 20 minutes in, and I'm like, I didn't have an issue with the documentary, but because I'd got it in my head we're covering it, I was like, what the fuck is this?
Don't you think it's possible, though, that you didn't fully listen to me?
No.
Okay. So I'll read you a quote from the director of this documentary, Jenny Livingston. She said, "This is a film that is important for anyone to see, whether they're gay or not. It's about how we're all influenced by the media, how we strive to meet the demands of the media by trying to look like Vogue models or by owning a big car. And it's about survival. It's about people who have a lot of prejudices." Oh.
She's fucked, lads.
"It's about people who have a lot of prejudices." Oh, fuck. I can't say this.
You're acting the bollocks. Prejudices.
I don't usually
struggle. One take.
I don't usually struggle with this word. What the fuck? This is podcasting 101 right now. "It's about people who have a lot of prejudices." Right, I'm not going to be able to get through this word. Let's just speed run it, right? "It's about people who have a lot of prejudices against them and who have learned to survive with wit, dignity and energy. And if any of you are fans of Drag Race, I'm sure you will at least know of this documentary because RuPaul references it every chance he fucking gets."
Yeah, because when we were watching it, like I was just sat there getting annoyed because I was like, I don't understand what we're fucking covering. Like all it was to me was a bunch of people, they were like an event,
mm-hmm.
dressing in drag, having a grand time.
Yeah.
And then they were interviewing different people, you know, and showing them at the event and stuff. And I was like, I don't understand what we're fucking covering.
You were sat there like, where's the crime?
You said as well, you knew there was some, like, I fell asleep, didn't I, towards the end?
Yes, you were annoying the shit out of me because I could tell you weren't taking it in properly. Like, you say I didn't tell you what it was about, like why we were watching it. I fucking know I told you this is to get a backstory.
You told me we're covering it.
But either way, regardless, I could tell Neil was like, what has this got to do with the podcast? I don't understand. I wanted Neil to watch it to see these people talking. The people we're going to be speaking about, hear them speak for themselves. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you get me? But
I do now.
He does now. But at the time, he just couldn't understand. He thought it was going to be a true crime documentary. And it just wasn't. Now, for those who are unfamiliar, I'll give a quick rundown so that we can have a bit more of an understanding of their lives within this culture.
Yeah.
Especially for Neil, who didn't really take it in properly.
No, I did. From what I saw of it, I did take it in.
Yeah.
But I was waiting for the crime.
You were just baffled as to where this was going to lead.
Yeah.
You couldn't see how it got from, like, one end
because
to the other.
Because of the location, I thought there's going to be a hate crime, there's going to be a shooting. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
My immediate thought was it's going to be some sort of hate crime.
Yeah. And it just never happened in the documentary, and you just didn't understand what was going on.
They were just fucking having the crack, fucking dancing about.
So in Paris is Burning, we take a look inside the ball culture. Balls are gathering of primarily African-American and Latin-American members of the LGBTQ community. This was a place where they could come together and feel free to express themselves without the prejudice they face in their day-to-day lives. Quote, "When you're gay, you monitor everything. How you look, how you dress, how you talk, how you act. And being at these balls was described as, it's like crossing into the looking glass. You go in and you feel 100% right with being gay." Now, ball culture isn't something new. It's been going for quite some years now. A man by the name of William Dorsey Swan hosted balls way back in the 1880s.
Yet people still today are like, it's a new thing. And
yeah, it's kind of seen as like, oh, it's popping up everywhere. And it's like,
yeah,
it's been going just because people had to be more underground with shit years ago, you know. William, who was born into slavery, would go on to be known as the first drag queen, or as he called himself, the Queen of Drag.
Did he name it drag? Well, he must have.
I assume it came from him, yeah, with the whole Queen of Drag, you know?
Yeah.
William hosted balls, giving people a safe place to express themselves. During a police raid in 1887, They were said to have found six men, quote, dressed in elegant female attire, quote, gaudy costumes of silk and satin. And from an article in the Washington Post, William was, quote, arrayed in a gorgeous dress of cream-coloured satin. So they're slagging these people off and kind of saying like, oh, they're perverse, they're this, that. They're like, oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful gown.
Thing is, it's like, you know how there's a lot of women, like fashion is very female dominant, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that there's so much aimed at women to look this way and buy into the marketing.
All you need, like, no one will put an outfit together like a gay man.
You've been watching that Queer Eye again, haven't you?
They're fucking unreal.
Did you ever watch Queer Eye back in the day?
No.
You haven't watched the new one, have you?
Still no.
But one of them's from Doncaster. One of the lads on Queer Eye's from Doncaster.
Still no.
The attendees would be arrested and charged with being suspicious characters, but clearly fabulously dressed suspicious characters.
Yeah, but you've got to remember, back in the day, that was considered suspicious, not for homophobic reasons.
Racial reasons.
No, what? No. Because, like, you got to remember, Nazis dressed up as women to spy on British soldiers.
Mm.
So I'm guessing it was used as a tactic before
that.
But
this was
well.
All in private, though. Do you know what I mean? So the police would come in and they'd be like, it's this room full of men dressed in women's clothing. It was more like, oh, you're a deviant, or, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Even years later, after William himself had stopped attending these gatherings, his brother was still involved with making the outfits for others. Bit of a family thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, getting back to the ball scene in 1980s New York. At the balls, there would be different categories to compete in. You could do or be anything you wanted to be. For example, the category of executive realness. You may not be an executive, but you can certainly look like one. As Dorian said, the fact that you're not an executive is merely because of social standing. Black people have a hard time getting anywhere, and those that do are usually straight. Basically, it was a chance to be whatever you wanted to be in that moment, whether it was, you know, the whole, like I said, the example of an executive, or just to be a model on the runway.
Yeah, I think, like, did they do if you're going to school?
Yeah.
I think another one was occupations. Military, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There was also legends of the ball. And this was described as being akin to being awarded, say, an Oscar. It was like, you're up there.
Yeah.
You know?
Is that how he got famous then?
Who?
RuPaul.
No, I don't think he was involved in this scene.
Oh.
RuPaul was more of like a club kid, as far as I'm aware.
Okay.
But there is a club kid murder, and we will be covering that at some point.
Okay.
Just so you know. Quote, a ball is as close to reality as we're going to get to all that fame, fortune, stardom, and spotlight.
Yeah, because you got to remember, these weren't just average people as well. These were homeless, some of them.
Yeah, a lot of these kids had run away from home. And like we said, a lot of Latin American and African American. So being a minority and then also being gay or trans, it was very difficult for a lot of these people. Like you just said there about it being particularly difficult for these people, another part of this culture was the different houses. A house served as a chosen family for individuals involved in the ballroom scene.
Yeah, an easy way to put it, imagine university campus with all the different frat houses. No, it was. Like, you know, you've got like
pride
Kappa in... Kappa or whatever. Is it Kappa Kappa?
Yeah, that's a tracksuit, isn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Like Kappa Kappa and Z9 or something like that.
Felt a bit of thigh.
Yeah.
Thigh mega tampon.
Yeah, you have all them. It was like that, weren't it? You'd have like a den mother. They call them den mother?
Yeah, so house and this mother. Would be a house mother, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I get what you're saying. It was like the pride of I am in this house.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I will represent this house.
And their surname would then be
the
house name.
Yeah, so like Neil just said, it would be led by a house mother or father, someone who's experienced in this lifestyle and would offer advice, support, or shelter to the house members, often referred to as the children. And again, as Neil brought up there a few minutes ago, a lot of the members of the house could have been rejected by their biological families for simply being who they were. And not just young adults, I'm talking about kids as well.
Yeah, I think there were one they were interviewing, he looked about 12, 13.
Yeah.
There was him and his mate on the streets.
Yeah, one was 13, one was 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another aspect of the balls was voguing. Voguing, which now I would say is fairly well known with the likes of Madonna's fucking bop of a song Vogue, was a form of dancing. A way of throwing shade, or you could describe it as a dance battle.
Hmm.
The name came from Vogue magazine and largely consisted of emulating how models in Vogue and other fashion magazines posed and moved. This is a good one here. Described as gay street gangs, but they would fight in the form of walking in the balls, which is a dance battle.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? One of the standouts for his unreal voguing was Willy Ninja. He chose the name Ninja for his house because he said, "Ninjas hit hard, they hit fast, an invisible assassin." And he also said, "We come out to assassinate."
Yeah, when we was watching it, I was thinking, if I was drag, I'd be with ninjas.
Just because the name alone or because of his fucking dancing? No, but Willy Ninja, he was fucking unbelievable. And he would actually go on to work with Malcolm McLaren on the song Deep in Vogue. Do you remember him?
Which one?
Malcolm McLaren?
No.
He was the shitster from our Sid and Nancy episode. He's the one who claimed that Glenn Matlock was replaced with Sid Vicious because Matlock liked the Beatles.
Oh.
Do you remember that little shit?
Yeah.
Yeah, him. But good for Willy Ninja, you know?
Yeah.
Working with him. Now that we've had a look at ball culture and we have a bit more of an understanding of the community that Venus and Dorian were involved in, let's talk about Venus. Venus Extravaganza was born on the 22nd of May in 1965. Venus was originally from New Jersey and she came from an Italian-American Puerto Rican background and she was one of five kids. Venus was a trans woman and when she was in her early teens, this is when she began going by the name Venus. At the age of about 13, Venus would really start to come into her own in terms of her identity. And it was for this reason she left home at such a young age. She said that her family had caught on to her lifestyle and, quote, "I didn't want to embarrass them, so that's why I moved away."
Yeah, like I remember when they were interviewing her and I don't know, she seemed like really nebbish.
Nebbish?
Yeah.
What's nebbish?
Nebbish, like timid.
Timid. She's just
very sweet.
Yeah. And you kind of, the person you want to like look out for and protect.
Yeah, she like, you just wanted to look after her.
Yeah. No, yeah, 100%. She was just very sweet, adorable. But something I do want to say is that it seems as though her family didn't feel negatively towards her.
Mm.
Which I will bring up a little bit later. Could we just go back to that word, nebbish, was it?
Yeah.
Where are you getting these words from? This is the third or fourth word you've just come out with.
Huh?
Have you got like an app or something? We get like a word of the day or what's going on?
No.
Well, there's something fucking sus. I can tell by the head on you when you're saying it. Like, this isn't coming from you. There's something going on.
I'm saying nothing.
All right, so someone's put you up to it. Right, okay. I'll get my people to look into it.
Yeah.
So back to Venus. From her family home, Venus moved to New York where she felt she could live her life more freely. This is where she would meet Hector Extravaganza of, you guessed it, the House of Extravaganza. During Paris's burning, Venus talks about Hector. She says he was the first gay man that she had ever met. And on her 15th birthday, Hector bought Venus a cake and threw her a party. So again, like we said, being brought into this family community and being taken care of and given that little bit of kind of like, let's spoil this person, make them feel special. In 1983, Venus joined the House of Extravaganza and became immersed in the ball culture. Sadly, Hector would pass away in 1985. Now, after Hector had died, Angie became the mother of the House of Extravaganza. She then took Venus under her wing and became her drag mother. And as the house mother, Angie was said to have been kind and compassionate to those around her. If someone had been thrown out by their family, Angie would take them in. If it was someone's birthday, Angie would make sure they got a present even when their biological mother didn't.
Mm.
And Angie herself had run away from home at the age of 14, so she knew from experience how difficult it would have been for others.
Yeah.
She described Venus as being like her main daughter of the house.
Favoritism.
Favoritism. But, you know, yeah, clearly they had a close bond. But, yeah, that's you can't be picking favourites, Angie. Venus's brother, Louis, he would later talk about Venus's cultural influence. He said not only did she popularise the phrase fierce, but she was the one to come up with the phrase I'm fierce while snapping her fingers twice.
Isn't that something that looked like Cardi B or Nicki Minaj would do?
A lot of people do it. We will actually talk a little bit about slang and stuff and, again, the influence on culture.
Yeah.
Her older brother John said she was voguing.
Oh, like a slay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like language like that. A lot of it does take influence from LGBTQ culture.
Yeah.
And it's just gone so mainstream now.
Yeah, it's because like people at work or the younger staff are just walking around saying slay. And it's like, do you actually know what slay means? It's not a good thing.
Yeah. So I actually watched Drag Race. Neil's not a fan, but I gave him a bit of advice to just annoy the shit out of some of the people he works with. So when they're going slay, slay, and he's getting pissed off because they literally say it to anything. They could be like, oh, did you sign off the checklist? And you go, yes, I did. Slay.
Yeah.
Did you refill the blue roll?
Have you had your break yet? Yeah. Slay.
Yeah.
Slay. What?
Did you clock in yet? Slay. Like, it's any fucking thing. And he's sick of it. Her older brother John said she was voguing before voguing was out. Now, as for what she wanted out of life, Venus definitely had a picture of what she wanted for the future. She said, I want a car. I want to be with the man I love. I want to get married in a church in white. I want to be a complete woman. I want a nice home away from New York, up in the Peekskills, or maybe Florida, somewhere far away where nobody knows me. I want to be a professional model behind cameras in the high fashion world. I want this. This is what I want, and I'm going to go for it.
I'm going to fucking Florida. You know, we got fucking crocodiles and alligators and that.
Talk about your big lizards. But before Venus could reach her dreams of becoming a high fashion model, she supported herself through sex work. Her drag mother, Angie, did have some concerns about this, though, stating, I always said to her, Venus, you're too wild with these people in the streets. Something's going to happen to you. But that was Venus. She always took a chance. She always went into strangers' cars. She always did what she wanted to get what she wanted. During Paris's burning, Venus talks about a particular encounter that scared the bejesus out of her. She talks about a time that she was with a client. Once the client realised that she was transgender, he accused her of trying to give him AIDS and threatened to kill her. She goes on to say, I was really terrified, so I grabbed my bag and I just jumped out of the window. Now I don't like to hustle anymore.
Yeah, because you got to remember, she was only like 5 foot.
Yeah, she was very tiny. Very petite. And very young as yeah. Well, you know. Sadly, Angie's fears for Venus would become all too real. On Christmas Day in 1988, Venus's body was found underneath a bed in the Duchess Hotel in New York. Her cause of death was strangulation, and it's thought that her body had been there for 4 days.
In a hotel?
Yeah, just shoved underneath the bed.
What, so other people stayed in there?
Probably not. I don't know. But it's just horrific for 4 days and then to find out on Christmas Day that this had happened to her, you know? So without knowledge of who her biological family were, detectives went to her house mother, Angie, to identify her body. They came to one of her performances and showed her a picture of Venus's dead body. Unable to verify her identity with her family, her body was going to be cremated. But Angie was the one to contact Venus's family and have to break the news to them. It seems as though the police didn't seem to put a lot of effort into seeking out her family, which we hear a lot when it's minorities. Now, over 30 years later, nearing close to the 40-year mark, it's still unknown who murdered Venus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's still unsolved.
So there's no, like, records of... Oh, because the hotel could have been in her name.
There's really not a lot known on this. But there is a new documentary out, which I haven't seen yet, but I am very excited to. It's called I'm Your Venus, and this documentary is going to show us both families of Venus, her biological and her Ball family. And I think after we've watched this, I think we will be coming back to Venus and her story, because I really do wish I could tell you more about her and her influence.
Yeah.
Now, when I watched Paris is Burning, the way Venus worded it stuck in my head when she said, I didn't want to embarrass them.
Mm.
It really kind of upset me, you know, the thought of like she left because she didn't want to bring it upon them. But like I briefly brought up earlier, her family have since said, there's a perception out there that we didn't care for her, which is so far from the truth. And like I said, in this documentary, we're going to hear her family speaking and trying to get answers to do with her murder. Venus was laid to rest at Holy Cross Cemetery in North Arlington, New Jersey. And Venus wasn't the only member of the House of Extravaganza to be murdered either. There's also the case of Lorena Extravaganza. And I'm not going to get into that case because I think we will cover it in a separate episode.
Okay.
But there's just, it's very sad to have had multiple tragedies within the one family, you know? So that's Venus's story. Next, we're going to talk about Dorian Corey. Dorian Corey was born on the 6th of June, 1937 in Buffalo, New York, to parents Franklin Legg and Mary Fox Clark. In the 1950s, Dorian left the family farm to study at the Parsons School of Design. By the 1960s, Dorian travelled through the States on tour for the Pearl Box Review, which was a cabaret drag act. Dorian would also go on to have her own clothing business named Corey Designs. Now, Dorian came from the side of drag that featured more pageantry. There was more sequins, feathers, kind of more showgirl, go big or go home.
Yeah.
Compared to some of the younger ones who were kind of more into, you know, said the high fashion, the model kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, because that was something I remember him saying as well about, like, whether they were homeless or whatever, they were going shoplifting the dresses.
Yes.
To wear. Because obviously they couldn't afford it, but they wanted these expensive dresses, so they were shoplifting them to wear for the ball.
Exactly. And Dorian actually brings that up during it, saying that, like, you know, they're going out and robbing it, or even if they're buying it, it's they're having this label to show they have something. Yeah. Which kind of thing, it doesn't mean you have anything.
Yeah.
Whereas more old school drag queens were seamstresses. They were fucking putting in the work to get these outfits put together. Now, one outfit that Dorian actually had was this feathered gown that would be extended over the audience, and it formed like a fucking tent over them. So it was a fucking show. Do you know what I mean? Dorian had also founded the House of Corey, who would go on to win over 50 grand prizes from the balls. She was also the mother to Angie Extravaganza, who, like we said, would go on to become the mother of the House of Extravaganza.
Yeah.
During Paris is Burning, Dorian breaks down the meanings behind what shade is and what it means to read somebody, like we're saying about the slang and how it's filtered down.
Yeah.
It's now commonplace. It's mainstream. She said, reading is the real art form of insult. To find a flaw and exaggerate it for the laugh. She then goes on to say that shade is when, I don't need to tell you you're ugly because you know you're ugly. So as you can tell, Dorian has a sense of humour. She's quite kind of dry in her humour.
Yeah.
She's good crack. On the 29th of August, 1993, at the age of 53, Dorian died of complications due to AIDS. After Dorian's death, her friend and caregiver, Lois Taylor, was the one to sort through Dorian's possessions. So Lois heads to Dorian's apartment to go through her things, possibly take a few for her own closet. You know, there's quite a lot.
See, you get that a lot.
What?
Vultures.
Well, not just that. She also brought some of her friends who were wanting to have a look to see if they could find something for their Halloween costumes.
Right.
So is that devastating, you know? Fucking bastards.
See, they could have done some sort of auction at one of these ball events.
Yeah.
And the money could have gone to an AIDS charity.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been okay.
Yeah.
But not been a vulture and been like, oh, I look good in that.
But I don't...
oh, I'll win the next ball in that.
I don't know if Dory maybe left it to her friend or whatever. You know, it might have been that. I don't know. But Neil's very upset about this, so we'll move on.
Bastards.
So like I said, as you can imagine, there is vast amounts of different items that would have been in Dorian's closet.
Mm.
So they're searching through all these different outfits, various pieces, you know, all the different fabrics that she would have used to make her outfits. And as they're searching through it, they come across an old, worn garment bag buried in the back behind all the clothes. Now, they can't get it open by just unzipping it. I don't know if it was jammed or, you know, what.
Well, back then they had them, my mum and dad had them. There were these tiny, not tiny, but smaller than usual padlocks. Mm-hmm. And they were for, if you look at any zip, it'll have a hole in it. Yeah, so if there's two zips, it's this little padlock what I'd go through.
Yes. Yeah, you're probably, I didn't even think that they, when I was reading about it, they said they couldn't get it open. And I just knew, oh, it was jammed. Yeah, you're probably, it was probably actually locked over. But yeah, so they couldn't get into it. So they grab a pair of scissors and they cut it open. Now, once they open this bag, an almighty stench comes out.
Body. An head. It's an ear, isn't it? Is it an ear or a foot?
To quote Lois, that's when we called the police, because honey, I wasn't chancing it. I think she's fucking right. So police show up and immediately they're sus of Lois. Basically, they're like, so you're here. Did you do this?
Mm.
It literally made me think of, you know, Ross and Friends with the, did you cut this couch in half?
Yeah.
That's where my mind went with the police, just looking at the body, looking at her, like, did you do this?
Yeah. But that's a very simplistic way to look at it.
What? You're here, there's a body there, you must have done it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they've called the police.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But you still hear that to this day. Like,
you find the body, you're immediately questioned.
I honestly don't know. Say if I was out walking Norman and I come across a body, I can't 100% say if I would call it in or not.
Yeah, maybe do it anonymously kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's the thing. Obviously, they're going to be like, okay, well, you found it. You knew where the body was. I get like a little bit of
question. Oh, straight away, they're pulling you in for lie detectors, which I've mentioned before, I wouldn't do.
But there's,
so then I'm looking like I'm guilty there.
Exactly. But like you just said, it makes people, it deters them from wanting to report shit, you know? So she recalled her interaction with the police. They said to her, if we find your fingerprints on it, to which she replies, I'll tell you one motherfucking thing. You might see my hand on top of that thing, but I only weigh 135 pounds. I couldn't even move that thing. Like, he's just like, fuck off. I mean, it's a full body.
Oh.
Like, it's just, sorry, that makes me laugh so much. So police begin their investigation to what is actually inside the garment bag. The mummified body of a man. Now, the body was laid in a fetal position and his skin had turned a shade of purple and yellow. And the cause of death appeared to have been a gunshot wound to the head. His body had been covered in baking soda, wrapped with plastic before being bound with rawhide. Apparently it's like a faux leather type material. And then put inside the garment bag. Now, although the body was extremely decayed, they were able to get fingerprints.
Oh, really? On a mummified body?
Yes, and they were able to identify the body.
Shit.
How does that grab you?
But they can't do that now?
Well.
How the fuck does that work?
They got extremely lucky. And I'm guessing maybe when the body was crudely preserved, it was straight away. I don't know what to tell you. You know, the body hadn't started to decompose before the efforts were made.
Yeah, yeah.
To, you know. This man was Robert Worley. Not a lot is known about Robert, but he was born on the 18th of December 1938. We also know that he served 3 years for the rape and assault of a woman in 1963. And it's thought that he had been estranged from his family since 1968.
See, now you told me that, fuck him. Like,
I know.
Hope she chopped his prick off.
From the state of decay, his last known whereabouts, and also some vintage pull tabs from beer cans that were found with the body, it was estimated that death happened about 25 years prior to discovery.
Oh yeah, do you know when they say pull tabs?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what they mean?
Pull tabs.
Yeah, so do you know like on a can now, you literally just fold it forward and then back?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. They didn't used to be like that.
It's like the whole top, isn't it?
It's not like the whole top. You'd open it and you'd pull it and it'd like do a slit and it'd get thinner and thinner and then it'd come off.
Oh, like, yeah, the strips. It's like a strip of metal rather than like a little tab.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, when I was researching this, different things were saying lids and some were saying tabs. And I was like, So I literally looked up the cans. Like, they're more like smaller kind of.
It's like an Only Fools and Horses. It'd just be a ring and you'd pull it and it'd take a strip off the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were found with the body. I'm not quite sure why. Was it for that reason? That in years to come, it might have. It seems an odd thing. You think you just put something else if you want them to be identified.
Might be so we could have this fascinating conversation.
So now we know who this is. Why did this happen? And what was this person's connection to Dorian? So there's a few theories. The first being that Robert had broken into Dorian's home and she shot him in self-defense.
Let's go with that.
Well, one of Dorian's friends claimed that she did own a .22. Her apartment was in Harlem and it was not the safest place to live.
Still isn't.
Jenny Livingston, who was the director of Paris is Burning, recalled that during filming, there was multiple gunfights outside the apartment where Dorian lived. So that's not out of the equation.
Yeah.
That's possible. There's also rumours that there's a note attached to the body which read, "This poor man broke into my home and was trying to rob me." But this has never been confirmed by police.
Yeah, I don't like when there's rumours like that.
Yeah.
If that was fact, it'd be issued.
Mm. Others thought that she could have been hiding the body for someone else, possibly to protect someone else in the house of Corey.
Yeah. See, because, can I give my opinion?
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of them who were sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was something to do with that. It was a punter, it went wrong.
The same as what happened with Venus. Like,
yeah.
Most like, sorry, actually, just jumping back to that. So we talked previously about Venus with a previous client and, you know, the danger she was in. We don't know what the sus was with her murder, but I believe, and I think it's the most likely thing, it was a similar situation.
But I thought she'd stopped.
She said that, but then like Angie's also said, she's dangerous. She's dangerous.
She needed money. Like,
she was going to do what she wanted to do to get what she needed in life and get where she wanted to go.
Yeah.
So one of the more compelling theories is that Robert and Dorian were or had previously been in an abusive relationship and that she shot him in self-defense. Her friend Lois had said that Dorian had previously written a short story. And this short story was about a transgender woman who had murdered her partner after she had been pressured into gender reassignment surgery.
Shit.
The story also mentions the Pearl Box Review, who, like we mentioned earlier, Dorian had previously worked for.
Yeah.
Now, during an interview with the police, Robert's brother Fred claimed that he remembered Robert talking about someone named Dorian. But Robert was drunk at the time, so it's not like it was a full, coherent conversation as such. It's kind of like, I'm pretty sure he mentioned that name before, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
But that's still good enough to me to add a piece to the puzzle. To me, it's also the most convincing theory.
Mm. No, I think mine.
What was yours again?
I think it was someone else in the house who was a sex worker.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be.
Told you before. You know, my new nickname is Columbo.
Excuse me, ma'am.
But if we're to go with the theory that they were a couple, it leaves the question, why didn't Dorian tell anyone or go to police?
Well, that's what I was going to... No, right. I don't think it's a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people who was around her would know she was in a... It doesn't matter, but she didn't say she was in an abusive relationship. No one were like, oh, him. Yeah, they were dating for 6 months.
Yeah.
No one had a notion.
Well, that's the one that I believe. It's also the most widely accepted theory.
Hmm.
So we're going to fucking work off of that one.
Okay. Because that's what you've got in your notes.
That's what I've got in my notes, because I'm most convinced of it. So, yeah, why didn't she go to anyone, tell anyone, what have you? Well, Dorian was a black drag queen living in a low-income area during the 60s, 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
The likelihood of police having any sympathy for her was slim to none.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've just said if you found a body, you'd be kind of a bit nervous to report it because they're immediately going to turn to you and go, what were you doing there?
Until it happens, I can't 100% say if I would phone it in.
Mm. I mean, the thing is, we've seen it before where police don't want to get involved with a quote-unquote gay thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in the case of Jeffrey Dahmer, when police didn't want to deal with the situation and handed over a naked, disoriented 14-year-old boy to Dahmer because he claimed the kid was his boyfriend.
Wait, and they just took his word for it?
Yeah, and essentially sent the boy to his death. Or when Jeffrey Rignall, a survivor of John Wayne Gacy, went to police, only for it to get kind of fobbed off as, you know, like a lover's quarrel or something, yeah, you know, again, don't want to get involved, spurring Jeffrey to take matters into his own hands and do some investigating himself. So, yeah, we've seen it before. You can completely understand why someone wouldn't go to police.
Mm-hmm. And then going to a friend or family member, you see that day to day now. It doesn't matter if it's because it's someone trans, gay, you know, they could be straight. It's just they're embarrassed to say.
Exactly.
Or they feel it's their fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or I get him angry.
Yes. Yeah, so not only would it have been incredibly unlikely for Dorian to have felt in any way comfortable going to police to say, hey, I've just shot my abusive partner,
mm-hmm,
but for them to have taken the abuse seriously in the first place would have been a risk for her.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, we'll never really know the full sus to do with Dorian and the body, but my belief is abusive relationship, shot him in self-defense. Yours is...
I think she was protecting another member of the family.
Mm. So I suppose to sum up, Venus and Dorian seem to be two very different people.
Yeah.
At the age of 23, Venus was a young woman with hopes and dreams of having a career in modelling. She longed for the traditions and sense of stability that marriage can bring, and to be able to truly live as she desired. Listening to her speak, I don't know, there's something so endearing about her. Like you said, she's kind of sweet, you want to protect her, you know. Dorian, on the other hand, Dorian was copped on, dry sense humour, a more no-nonsense type of attitude, and just, it is what it is. You ask her a question, she answers, no bullshit. She was aware it wasn't always sunshine and roses. Again, both very different, but both equally admirable in their own rights. Apart from the body in the closet, don't do that.
That's
don't admire that. Just as I did in Paris is Burning, let's finish with a quote from Dorian. I always had hopes of being a big star, but as you get older, you aim a little lower. Everybody wants to make an impression, some mark upon the world. Then you think you've made a mark on the world if you just get through it, and a few people remember your name. Then you've left a mark. You don't have to bend the whole world. I think it's better to just enjoy it. Pay your dues and just enjoy it. If you shoot an arrow and it goes real high, hooray for you. Like, I just fucking love that. That is very much my outlook. You know, if you get through it, you know, you're doing amazing.
Yeah.
Fair play to you. I feel like Neil, on the other hand, is slightly more of a dreamer. You're more of like a Venus, you know, like this kind of like happy, hopeful type of person in a lot of ways. Yeah. Like you kind of, you're quicker to have like a dream and try and work for it. Whereas I'm kind of like, try for it, but you know, may not happen.
Do you know, like her saying that,
mm-hmm,
that made me think, because how big drag is now, do you think they would be like RuPaul? Now, if they'd been going for so many years and...
Well, now, like, obviously RuPaul is, like, so mainstream. You know, he's created this massive empire for himself. Like, retroactively, Venus is kind of like an icon in the trans community, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
How she spoke so candidly about her life and stuff. Fair fucks to her. To do that in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
Dorian was just... so iconic in how she spoke, and just like, you know, like if you shoot an arrow and it goes real high, hooray for you. Like, it's just so fucking funny. I don't know. I'd like to think they would, but I don't know. Anything else to close that off with or not?
I ain't got nothing.
I've got nothing. So what did you think then? We had the very sad side with the murder, and then we had the slightly more mystery thing with Dorian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you see why, like, I know you didn't get it at the time, but do you see why I was like, we have to watch this? There's a few different cases in this.
I'm probably going to rewatch it.
Yeah, and then you'd be looking at Dorian like, I know what you were up to. Yeah. Somewhere in the background there's some shit hidden.
Yeah. No, that is a rough one. I think with Venus, I think she'd gone back to sex work. But then again, people would know, like, I don't know.
I assumed with Venus, she was probably still doing sex work, but it was probably more with regular clients. rather than taking the chances. And then maybe she did that one time.
It's more like an escort.
Yeah, I think when she said, I don't want to hustle anymore, it's more like taking on new clients that she didn't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we don't know for sure. How about Noddy?
What have you got?
Balloon Fest 86. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, so in Cleveland, Ohio, on the 27th of September in 1986, a Guinness World Record was about to be attempted. It was for the most balloons released at one time.
Just normal?
Just balloons.
Okay. Not like hot air balloons?
No, balloons, like at a kid's party.
Okay.
Thousands of volunteers were there to set up and inflate 1.5 million balloons.
Did Airspace know about this?
I would hope so. I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
But shit goes awry, regardless.
Okay.
Now, like, I was watching some of the footage back, and I was like, why is this a thing? Why would you do this?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense to me. Now, because there was a rainstorm forecast, they decided to release the balloons early. At 1:50 p.m., with a crowd of over 100,000 watching on, 1.5 million balloons were released into the skies over Cleveland. So, you know yourself, helium-filled balloons, they just sort of float up and away until they eventually deflate and fall back to the ground.
Yeah.
But because of the storm that was approaching, it pushed the balloons back down towards the ground, causing shit to go down.
What do you mean?
Because usually they're just going to float up and away and they'll kind of land.
I understand the premise. I mean,
because there was such heavy, you know, wind and fucking rain.
Yeah.
It was forcing them back down. They're just going all over. It was a fucking shambles.
Okay.
You know, it was right kerfuffle, you know? The airport had to shut down a runway for half an hour. Like, this was bad. This was disrupting the place. So, like I said, the airport had to shut down a runway for half an hour. There was a shitload of traffic collisions. Animals also got injured.
This is what I mean by I don't understand.
What?
Like, you're driving a car. The average car is, what, 2 ton?
Sure.
So you're telling me people were swerving out of the way of a balloon to drive into a car?
1.5 million balloons. It was basically
there's
raining.
There's not 1.5 million balloons around a car.
But they're raining down. It's raining balloons, Neil.
I suppose.
The balloons are raining down into the traffic. Like, I don't, like, you seem like very fucking like, oh, ridiculous. It's a drama over nothing.
It's never happened to me, but it would not make me steer either way.
Okay, well, regardless of how fantastic Neil is.
I think I'd be driving and I'd be like, the fuck's with all these balloons? But I know they're not going to do anything to my car. Like, I can drive with taking my eyes off the road.
Yeah. Well, it gets worse.
Okay.
Two people fucking died because of this. A search went out for these two fishermen, but they couldn't find them in the water because of all of the fucking balloons. Their bodies would be found a few days later after they had washed ashore.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, they literally, there's footage of the search party out in the water talking to the news going, we can't see anything. It's just balloon. Like, it's just, the water is completely littered.
What was the record?
What do you mean, before?
Yeah.
I don't know, 1.4? I don't know.
1.4999.
I have to be honest with you, when I was looking at this, I was fucking enraged. This is the dumbest fucking world record.
Yeah.
Like, look at the carnage it fucking caused.
Yeah.
Like, two people lost their fucking lives.
Yeah, I think Guinness records need to be, in any way, it shouldn't affect the public.
Yeah. If you can do this in a room of, like, a conference. Yeah, like in a conference room or something.
Yeah, if you want to see how many fags you can put in your mouth at once, it's your business. You sat on a chair in a room doing it. It's not affecting anyone else.
Yeah.
If you choke on it, it's down to you. You're the one who's wanting to do it. But yeah, letting stuff off into the atmosphere. No.
Yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, all of this chaos would result in two lawsuits. And I mean, again, I have to say, who the fuck thought this was a good idea? Even if you argue that they couldn't have predicted the exact outcome, it's just a shit ton of fucking litter.
Yes.
What is the fucking point of this?
Yeah.
And you know what really sent me over the edge with this? I'll show it to you later. And, you know, for those listening, watch it yourself. There's a video and I'll link it down below. There's this guy and he's like, it's time to show that Cleveland isn't a joke anymore. Like, You're going to do that by releasing a fuck ton of balloons. I don't understand what the thought process was here. It's just, it's insane to me. But there you go. There's Balloon Fest 86. I hadn't heard of this until I started looking into it a few weeks ago. Mm. What the fuck? How is this more like, is it more well known in America maybe? What the fuck? What the fuck, Cleveland?
It might be something what's hush hush. Let's forget that happened.
It is embarrassing.
Yeah, it really is. If you're going to crash your car because of a fucking balloon, Jesus.
Oh, fucking dicks.
So, maybe next time I'm going to let off 1.4.
Yeah, try that.
And see how that goes. Mm. Maybe check the weather forecast.
I know, I can't even believe it. This fucking storm. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.